Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to those who know that there's something dreadfully wrong with the political, religious, media, military, and economic influences which are affecting our world. We realize that these institutions are the problem, and therefore reorganizing or repopulating them, sending a new group of people in with different ideas isn't going to make a difference. We can't rearrange the deck chairs from red to blue on our sinking ship of the Titanic and expect a favorable outcome. We realize because they are the problem, we need to look behind the headlines to educate ourselves, to understand who is perpetrating the tragedies that are besieging our planet, why they are doing so, what we can do about it. Because based upon the plague of adverse political, religious, academic, military, media, and economic influences, we have at most 15 years until all hell is unleashed, until we experience a complete world collapse, and along with it, the life that we have come to know. As a result, in our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms, because there is hope, there is promise, there is possibilities. And we're going to engage God, not on faith, most certainly not through religion, but through evidence and reason. Since His guidance regarding His covenant provides the only reliable escape from what is about to befall our planet. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is toll-free, 877-300-7645. Today we're going to reverse the order of our program. We're going to begin with the Torah and specifically with the covenant, and expect to have a discussion with IQ Al-Rasuli in the second hour this morning. And we're going to talk to IQ about why the only informed, rational, and moral approach to Islam is to be wholly and completely intolerant of it. But between now and then, I'd like to share what God said about His covenant, because I would like all of you to have the opportunity to participate in it. And Yahweh said to Abram, "It is my request and my desire that of your own volition, you literally walk away from and genuinely come out of your country," which was Babylon, "away from your relatives and away from your father's house to God's realm, which is the result of the relationship I will provide and reveal." When it comes to our participation in the covenant, as we discussed yesterday, even though this is a request and it is subject to free will, it is also a requirement. If you ignore the request, if you're adverse to the request, if you're simply ignorant of the request, if you're hostile to this condition, opposed to it, then you will be excluded from having a relationship with God. Now that's astonishing in its implications. Every religion promises its adherents that if they acquiesce to their edicts, if they believe them, that they will find a reward in heaven after this earthly life. Well, that's the opposite of what God is saying here. It says if you choose to rely on your religion and you participate in a religion and you're unwilling to walk away from your Babylon, which in today's world, the closest analog to Babylon today is Christianity. From a tangible point of view, if you want to look at the world power implications, economic influence, military influence, media influence, it would be the United States. But from a religious perspective, it's most certainly Christianity. And God is saying, unless you're willing to walk away from these things, then you are never going to see the realm that He is revealing and offering. If you're going to cling to societal traditions and be influenced by your relatives. If you're never going to leave your father's house, which in most cases is a house of religion or a house of politics, politically or religiously defined, then you are excluded from having a covenant relationship with Yahweh, and there is no other relationship. Now, it is interesting, and I do hope we get a call in again from David, because the best part of his story yesterday was left untold. But there is this that we'll find if he does call in, and I don't want to spoil it, but his teacher, the Christian, after David began to share what he had come to know, immediately asked David as to whether or not he could or would be willing to tell him about salvation. And what we find is that this is really the essence of the religious perspective. She this teacher immediately went to salvation and not to relationship, because their concern is for themselves. That's the nature of a religious individual. Are you saved? They will ask. If when a Muslim reads Prophet of Doom, they won't actually read it, but they'll just see the site and see that it's hostile to Islam. They'll say, you know, you're going to be condemned. You're going to burn in hell. And it's all about salvation, but that's not the way it is with Yahweh. Yahweh didn't reach out to Abram and say, hey, pal, do you want to be saved? Did he? He said, hey, are you willing to walk away from what you've held dear? Are you willing to walk away from these influences in your life? Are you willing to do that so that we can have a relationship radically different? But Christians aren't interested in that. They're interested in whether or not you're saved. In the covenant, there is a profound order of things. Just as the covenant is the sole basis of the Torah. Without the covenant, the Torah doesn't exist. Without the covenant, the Torah serves no purpose. The focus of the Torah is the covenant. The covenant is a relationship with God. And the reason the covenant comes first is that immediately after God introduces himself to us and says, oh, by the way, I'm the creator of the universe. I'm the author of life. I'm the individual who, in an ark of the covenant, saved Noah and his family. That he begins to tell us the story of establishing his covenant relationship with Abraham. Is because with God, the covenant comes first. You either come to know him and choose to have a relationship with him, or you're not going to be saved. Salvation is a byproduct of the covenant. And so for all of those who ask, well, how can I be saved? They're asking the wrong question. You know, whoa there. Why would you think that a God whose name you don't know, whose nature you're opposed to, whose teachings you abhor, whose guidance you completely ignore, would want to save you and spend eternity with you? You know, back up. What God is saying is, you know, before we engage in a relationship, it's important that you walk away from those things that I abhor. And yet, the Christian would have you believe that God chooses to save those whose thinking, whose beliefs, whose behaviors are that which he detests. Dragging all of that muck into his house. You know, why would he want the villages in Yisrael to be rid of the rats who were diseased? Why did he want to eliminate those who were corrupt from the realm that Noah and his family lived in. I mean, why would God want to perfect us before we enter his house? Why did he ask us to walk away from Babylon? And the answer is simple. God doesn't want us to drag that disease, the political and religious disease, into his home. That's really it. And so everyone whose perspective is, how can I be saved, is not thinking of this from God's perspective. And if you want to be saved, you really need to think about it from God's perspective, not from your own. God created the universe. He conceived life. He authored his Torah. He offered his covenant for the express purpose of us engaging in a family-oriented relationship with him so that he could enjoy all of the happiness and fulfillment and growth that comes from having children and raising them in a family. That's what he wants to do for all eternity. And once you understand that's what he wants, if you like him and want the same thing, want to be a child in his family, then come to embrace the terms and conditions of his covenant, and he'll do what loving dads do. The consequence of that, the result of that, will be that he'll save you. But if your emphasis is, what's in it for me? Go away. Now, there's a lot in it for you. But that ought not be your first priority. And, you know, it's so sad that Christians are wont to put God on this pedestal and worship him, and this notion that a God who would, you know, conceive us to worship him is a disgusting individual, not worth knowing. Insecure, inadequate. But a God who would say, you know, I really want to get to know you. I want you to get to know me. I want to spend quality time together. I want us to party together, to explore together, to learn together, to grow together. That's a God worth knowing. And his invitation is the covenant, and we'll continue in a moment. To Shattering Myths, we're talking about the single most important thing in the universe. It's the covenant, which is a family-oriented relationship. Yahweh made absolutely certain that we would understand that his covenant was family-oriented by asking us in this opening statement to walk away from our father's bayeth, our father's house, home, and household. And he's saying that because he wants us to make this transition from the human family to the eternal and Almighty's family, the covenant family. But by using Father's house in this opening statement, which is written with the Hebrew letter Beth, Beth is only one letter removed from Bereth. Bereth is the Hebrew word for covenant. Bereth, more fully amplified, since it is based upon Beth, means family-oriented relationship. Now, Beth and Bereth, in that they're only differentiated by a singular letter, the letter Rosh adds to the overall meaning of the of transcending Bereth or Beth, home, family, to Bereth, family-oriented relationship, by the addition of a Rosh. Now, the Rosh in Hebrew was depicted showing a person's head. The word itself means first, beginning, best, most important. If you had a group of things, it would be the top thing. And so we're talking about the first family, and not the first family of the United States. We're talking about the first family of the universe. And so if you wanted just to be on the simplest, most direct amplification of Beth, family, and home, to Bereth, family-oriented relationship. You would add to family and home, first family, and first family would really comprise two relevant concepts. First, as in the first family conceived. So Yahweh conceived the covenant before there were any other families on earth, the first in the order of things. That's the reason why a derivative of Reshith is the first word in the Torah. It begins Ba Reshith in the beginning. Ba meaning in, and then beginning from Reshith. So, and Rosh is the basis of Reshith. So first in the sense of a sequence of things. The first family conceived. First also in the merit of things. And in other words, the most important family. The first and foremost family, God's family. Those are the things that are added. Now, if you look at the depiction of the letter, the Rosh, and the original alphabet in which this Torah was written, what you find is that by depicting the human head, what God is saying is, first of all, first and foremost, and it's not a male or a female head, it's just a human head, that the covenant, this family, is for Homo sapiens, human beings, men and women. Second, the head depicts an eyes to see from which we can observe Yahweh, ears which enable us to listen to Yahweh, and a mouth which enables us to respond to what we see, to what we hear. And it is through our brains, this input of information, through our eyes, through our ears, into our brains, that then we come to both know and understand, putting us in a response, in a position where we can respond with our mouths and our communication. And this is all a communicative concept here. It depicts the kind of relationship that this family would be based upon. Listening to one another, speaking to one another, communicating to one another, learning from one another, thinking together, understanding one another. Powerful concepts that help us expand from Be'eth family to Be'ereth family-oriented covenant relationship. Now, as it relates to this, the distinction between a request and a requirement, the same exists relative to the Moed Mikre. Glenn, I think it was, in the program yesterday, spoke about how they are presented as an RSVP, where yes, we've been given an invitation to meet with God seven times each year, and to this path that these invitations direct us towards is ultimately to camping out in God's home with Him on Sukkah. That invitation doesn't do you any good if you don't respond to it. You know, the R of RSVP. So it's an invitation, but you need to respond. And the same thing is true with this request to participate in the covenant. It's there for all of us, but it's only beneficial if we respond. Good morning. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. It's a tremendous pleasure for me to welcome back a guest caller that we had on yesterday's program. David is his name. David told us a remarkable story yesterday, but the most remarkable part of the story we didn't have time to listen to. And so I'm going to ask David to begin, if you will, at the beginning and kind of walk through the process. So, first of all, David, welcome back.
Hello.
Hi, David. Yesterday, you told us that you had an encounter in a school, and I don't need the name of the school or the location of the school, but is it a public school or is it a private religious school?
It's a private religious school.
Okay. And you thought that maybe the school had a Baptist orientation?
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, it just by way of background, both of my sons left public schools and attended Christian schools because the private Christian schools were the best schools in town, and that in many subjects, particularly in math and the sciences, my children at 5 and 6 years, or 5th and 6th grade, knew more than the teachers seemed to know. And so they spent most of their time helping other students as opposed to learning themselves. While I am not religious, I'm opposed to religion. Both of my sons spent a considerable part of their youth attending a private Christian school because it was the best education they could get, and they knew the truth and had the character to stand up. So I wasn't concerned that they would be improperly influenced, but I was fairly comfortable they'd be well educated. So it sounds like your mother and father have made the same kind of education available to you. Is that correct?
Mostly my mother. My father is not really in the picture.
Okay.
But,
all right.
Yeah,
your uncle is somebody that you relate to and spend time with?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you won the lottery when it comes to uncles. You've got probably the...
yeah.
your uncle may be the nicest man I've ever met. David's uncle is a fellow named William. I've gotten to know William over the course of this show. He's in the business of repairing elevators. But it's William's heart, his mind, his character that shines so brightly. So your father may not be in the picture, but when it comes to uncles, you've got the best man I have ever met. It's my honor to be able to call William a brother. So you were at this Christian school, and they had a writing assignment or a question that you were supposed to respond to. Can you share what that question was?
The question said, it asked me, can you tell me what is the price you had to pay to receive salvation? And I wrote, I did not have I had no cost. There was no cost because my salvation is through Yah and not your Jesus Christ. And so my teacher was very, very, he was blown away by that. And so he automatically called me up and he said, "What is this you wrote?" And we had this gigantic confrontation at his desk in front of all my students, my fellow students, and he attacked me with all these questions, and he was very sarcastic and cold and curt, and he really was putting me down because I'm standing there attacking his religion, and he's so firm on where he stands on where he is currently, and it was really hard for him to hear something like that.
Yeah. Stunningly defensive. It would be a overwhelmingly defensive, and beyond defensive, he was argumentative and accusative.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting here is that you were in a school, correct?
Yes.
Isn't the purpose of a school to learn?
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
Do you think it's possible to learn without questioning?
No, I think
questioning. Correct. And in fact, your response is actually better than the question that I posed. You can come to know without questioning just by memory, memorization, exposure, memorization. You cannot come to understand, however, without questioning.
Yeah.
You've got to question the relationship between things to transition from knowing to understanding. And that's what you have done, and that is the merit of questioning. So you were... making a statement that would question the merits of his religious faith, and that's why he became so offensive. Correct?
Yeah.
Now he didn't just do this quietly, privately, one-on-one with you after the class, and he didn't just do this with you sitting in your seat, but he actually asked you to come up to his desk and then berated you in front of the whole class.
Yeah. He called me up and he said, "David, can you explain this to me? So you're saying that you had you paid nothing to receive salvation?" I said, "No, there should be no fee for salvation." And so he said, "So you're calling me a heretic?" And then everyone starts laughing, and I'm like, "I never said that." And he's like, "That's what you're implying." And I said, "No, I'm just saying for me, Yah is my salvation, because without Yah, there is no salvation. There is no Jesus. There's no Rock Kodesh. There's nothing.
Right.
And so he's highly, highly offended. And he keeps asking me, so what about the books? What about the entire Bible? I'm like, well, I really look down upon the entire New Testament and most of the books, but I do mostly look at the Torah, the first few books of your Bible. And I know that the Bible, the current translations that are very popular right now have a lot of wrong transliteration. And mm-hmm. And so I told him, I'm like, so Paul, I remember the first thing I remember studying, I told him, I don't believe in the last part of the Bible because Paul was demonically possessed or influenced while he was writing these mm-hmm. things. And he says, so you're saying that the entire Bible is a lie. And I'm like, most mm-hmm. of it isn't, it's not a lie, it's just that Paul was very, very, very much misguided in his writings and he was totally far from Yah. And he's like, so how are we supposed to be saved? And I'm like, through Yah. And he could not get that through his head. He always thought there was a price, you had to do this, you had to do this and that and that. And it was just it's like an industry. Like I remember reading, Christianity is an industry. And right. To me, I'm like, why? It's so much more complicated than it needs to be. He was humiliated. He was humiliated by me. And I think he dropped it so we could eventually pick it up after school.
Yeah, and you were extraordinarily courteous. You're extraordinarily courteous. What happens, by the way, with most religious people, since evidence and reason don't resonate with them, is that they will create straw men and red herring arguments. And so, for example, when you said your salvation is from Yah and you didn't have to pay for it, it's something that he gave you. He went immediately to, so you're telling me that I'm a heretic. Well, that's what's called a debate, or a rational fallacy, a logical fallacy. No, that's not what you were saying. And that was an extraordinarily inappropriate tack for a thoughtful person to take. And then when you said that you emphasized the Torah, and that you discount the New Testament because Paul was, by his own admission, demonically influenced. He said he was demon possessed. He went so the Bible is not true. And, you know, that's, again, that's a non sequitur. One thing doesn't flow from the other. It's a misquotation of what you said. And by you being very well informed and being very patient and saying, no, that's not what I said. This is what I said.
Oh,
and my guess is that had he said to you, well, you know, how could you ever even conceive of saying that Paul was demonically influenced? You would have been able to point him directly to the statement that Paul made in his second letter to the Corinthians. You sound like you are well enough informed that you know that Paul himself, in his second letter to the Corinthians, said that the goad or thorn in his side was a messenger from Satan. And so you would say, it's not my opinion here. You know, this is not my opinion. The man himself admitted that he was demon possessed. So, you know, that's good enough for me to say, you know, I think I'm going to get my spiritual advice from the other side.
Exactly. Yes. But I remember the thing I think that hit him the most was one of the question after he asked me. So what are you saying for all this? He said, so are you a Christian? And I automatically knew how to answer that question. And I knew that was probably going to be the hardest question I was going to answer. And I said, I am not a Christian, nor will I affiliate myself with being a Christian or with Christians. And he said, he looked at me like I just dropped in from an alien planet. It was so funny. But
was there a follow-up question on that, is to give you an opportunity to explain why you're not a Christian?
Yes, but he's the kind of person where he needs to, as soon as you ask a question, he automatically has a question. So he cuts me off all the time. So
that's another example of religious faith, David. Somebody who is governed by religion they, when you present something that they don't know how to deal with and they can't respond to, they simply go on to the next subject. I spent a lot of time debating Muslims right after having written Prophet of Doom. And what I found is every time I made a statement that they could not refute, they couldn't deal with, the first thing they would do is just change the subject and go on to the next one. And in actual debate, if you can't respond to and can't deal with a statement, then you lose the debate. You know, in a real debate, you can't go on to the next question until you've dealt with the past one. And if you can't deal with the past one, the debate's over. So, and from a logical point of view, the debate was over. You had prevailed, but this takes an enormous amount of courage, what you're doing, David, because that man has authority over you, and not your soul, but over your grades and influence in that school. So what you're doing here is just gargantuan amounts of courage.
Yes, I mean, I am not the person to enjoy confrontation. I hope no one is. But I mean, I try to be respectful and to be patient. And I mean, this man is supposed to write my letter of recommendation, so I was gonna be as nice as I could. So, but yeah, it was actually pretty easy. It's just I wish he could have let me speak more, because the students, I think, were the thing that hurt the most. Like, they were just like watching, and I think now they treat me differently. Like, okay, what's this deal? Like, they watch me like I'm about to explode. Like, they don't know what's happening.
Yeah, and that is the nature of embracing Yahweh and his Torah teaching, is that so few people do it, that it's so out of the common, so uncustomary, that most people look at those who have come to understand and accept Yahweh as being odd, because we are so few among so many. So what you're experiencing is the way it must be. This is the reason that Yahweh told it would be this way. He said, you know, very few are going to find the doorway to life, and the vast majority of people are going to go the broad and popular way of death and destruction. And so I think you are smart enough that you recognized that being ostracized somewhat by your peers was going to be a natural consequence of embracing Yahweh.
Yes, and that's another thing is when we were in the church and we knew we had to leave, my mom and I were in her bedroom. We were just relaxing and studying. And I remember when we finished studying, we were just talking. And she told me, she said she was scared of, you know, because losing all those, they're family. They're like family to us. And she said she's scared of losing them. And I said, Mom, I'm willing to lose all my friends there and anywhere else just so I can find the truth. And I remember we told that to my teacher, and we everything else we told him, he was crying. And
you went back to the teacher. Your mom wanted to, as I understand the story, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but you went, your mom said that, recognized that it was completely inappropriate for your teacher to have treated you that way. And your mom doing
she's actually right here if you want to talk to her.
Okay, but I've got a note that says that she's, if she would like to talk, I would love to be able to talk to her. But my understanding here is that your mom did the mom thing, the thing that a loving mom will always do. I mean, you want to, if you want to get a mom mad, do something that's inappropriate to her child. And I don't care how old the child is. I mean,
exactly.
I know when my youngest son, who was I think 24 at the time, was abused by a teacher at school. Now my wife, got the claws out and wanted to go after this teacher. Now she sent me because she's less confrontational than I'm willing to be. So she sent me to go do it. That's what it's all about being a parent, by the way.
Yeah.
That's a right, loving, courageous, appropriate thing for mom to do. So mom wanted to go back in and to confront the teacher and tell the teacher, no, this is what you did here was wrong. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And you were willing to go with her on that, correct?
Oh yeah, I was totally on board.
Okay. So you've and at this point, now you go back to the teacher after school, and your mom begins the discussion. Is that correct?
Yes. She had already been with him for about an hour.
Okay.
Because I was in a after school elective class, and
okay.
She was already sitting with him, and I had to wait till that class was over to go sit in with them.
Okay, I really like your mom already, man. She is, that's the right kind of parenting. So a mom did this. She even did it on her own, and then you come in. Now, I'm told by and I think it was by William, your uncle, that your mom somewhere along the way when you walked in said, "My son is fully capable of defending himself and answering for himself." And your mom made a statement like that, and then you began to speak to your teacher again. Is that correct?
Yes.
Oh man.
You
won the lottery on moms too. I mean, it's really cool when a parent has, knows their own child to the point that my child can stand up. Man, I know he's got character. There's substance. He's got backbone. He can handle himself. This is. Man, you won the lottery on moms.
Thank you.
Yeah. So that's kind of what happened. So now you are it's go time for you. You've been given the opportunity to now quietly with this teacher to talk to them again. Tell us what happened.
Well, actually, I think my mother would like to tell you some of the things
okay.
that happened.
Okay.
Hi, Yara.
Oh, hi, Mom. How are you?
I'm fine. My name is.
Oh, wow. Wow. You have raised a remarkable young man.
Yes, I agree. He's a wonderful, wonderful young man. He's a blessing.
Yeah. Is William your brother?
William is my nephew.
Okay. Oh, all right.
You.
Okay.
He's married to my niece, so he's my nephew by marriage.
Okay, all right. Okay, so that's how you know William. I've known William for a better part of 2 years now, and really, really like your nephew. All right, so this is a remarkable story. You have decided that it's that the thing that a loving mom has to do is go protect. Her son from harm. This teacher attempted to harm your son. You went to the school, you spent an hour with this teacher, and then your son came in. Can you share some of what transpired?
Well, on my way to the classroom, I was telling myself, Naomi, control yourself.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a big deal. It's not the end of the world. Just mm-hmm. say what Yah had revealed to you.
Right.
And, But what did upset me as a mom is how he humiliated my son in front of his peers.
Yeah.
He would perpetually ask questions mm-hmm. one after the other without allowing my son to answer.
Yep.
And so that was upsetting to me.
Yes. As a mom, it's the right thing to do. You going to confront the teacher who had harmed your son? That's what family and love and being a parent is all about.
Yeah, well, yes, that's true. So, I'm new to this. We just started. William presented this to me, I think at the mid or end of August. So I just started reading and studying, really, is what I do. I don't read, I just study and dig deep. And so I didn't have all the answers, and I don't think I ever will, but I didn't have all the answers. But what I did learn was more than enough to defend what
mm-hmm.
I believe. And
mm-hmm.
So when I sat with this teacher, and he, said, I'm very worried about David. He said this and the other. I want you to know, because, Amy, I know you. I know you're an amazing Christian because I knew his wife. I took care of her for 2 years before she passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember seeing you with your Bible and so on and so forth. So I need to talk to you about your son.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I told him, well, please tell me your thoughts about my son. And he did. And, you know.
Well, good. So you didn't even let him move this to you. I mean, he's defined you now as a Christian. And you say, you know, this is not about me. So you just went immediately back to your son.
Right.
Good.
So he did. And he was very, you know, concerned. And David said mm-hmm. this and the other, what he, you know, mm-hmm. made to you. And mm-hmm. he says, Amy, is this true? Is this true? And I said, yes, it is true. We are not Christian. And
wow.
his mouth dropped, you know, his face dropped, and said, but I've seen you with my wife and how you've done this and the other. And I said to him, but God revealed his truth to me. And what little was revealed to me, because I'm new at this, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to the original, you know, manuscripts, mm-hmm. the original, you know, the Hebrew, mm-hmm. you know, before right. Constantine and everybody, right. you know, changed.
Yeah. And by the way, Amy, so that you're comfortable here, we're all new at this. We're all just learning. None of us have all the answers. It's, you know, we're getting a chance to learn from the fellow that created the universe and authored life and is the most amazing. You're a pretty special mom, but he's even a better dad than you are a mom. And we're getting to learn from him, and we're all in the exact same position. So don't discount the fact that you don't know everything yet. I can tell you I don't either, but I'm sure having fun learning.
Yeah, it is fun. It's a great fun journey. It's an amazing weight lifted.
It is. Yeah, it's amazing weight lifted, and it's just learning all of a sudden becomes the most fun thing you can do, and there's nothing more fun than you have this benefit of being able not only to learn from Yahweh, but to be able to share that learning with your son.
Yes.
You know, it looks like we're coming to a top of the hour break. I was hoping that we could skip the news and the commercials, and if we can, great. If not, will you please stay on through the break, and I'd love to be able to conclude this story with you, Amy.